Everyone, it is Morgan Dubon. I'm back again with another episode of the Journey Podcast. I'm here with Hala, my good friend and now business partner in all things podcast. Welcome, Hala, to the Journey Podcast today.
Morgan, I am so happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
So Hala is a top 10 business category podcaster. She has an incredible network that has, I would say, like pretty much at this point, the top business podcast in her network. And she is a self-made woman, an incredible story. If you follow her on Instagram, you know, she's passionate about a lot of things I'm passionate about in terms of social impact issues and things happening around the world. And more importantly, she is a woman of her word, you know, someone that very quickly I said, oh, this woman is about it. She is about this business. She is getting this money and she's going to do what she said she's going to do, you know, and oftentimes in the world of business, there's a lot of fluff. There's a lot of people who are saying that they can get deals done, saying that they can help you grow, saying that they can help get you in the right places. And then it falls flat after, you know, you've signed the terms and they move on to the next deal that they're trying to close. Mm-hmm. So today I wanted to open the doors behind the world of podcasting.
Hey everyone, I'm Morgan Dubon, a passionate entrepreneur and life advisor. With the Journey Podcast, you'll discover that success isn't about the destination, it's about the journey. I'm sharing stories of amazing people who've taken control of their lives. Join me on my own journey to discover the secret sauce behind reaching success with permission from no one else.
I am 1 year in to podcasting. This is my second podcast. My first podcast, like not failed, but just was like really just for friends and family and stuff. But this podcast, The Journey, has been very successful. We just got in the top 15. I think we're 16 today, but top 15 in the business category, which I'm excited about. So much work to do that, by the way. We can talk about that in a second. And so today we're going to just talk about podcasting. If you're considering being in a podcast world, this is a good episode for you. Or if you have a podcast already, if you're wondering how to get ranked, how to grow, how to get deals, what deals look like. This is it. This is what we're doing today. Welcome.
I love it. Sounds so juicy. I love talking about podcasting. So I'm like excited to have this conversation.
Yes. Okay. So first, let's start with you as a podcaster. Mm-hmm. Tell me how you got started in the world of podcasting.
So I've been doing this sort of thing for a long, long time. I actually started my career at Hot 97, the world's number one hip hop and R&B station, about 12 years ago when I was in college. I was Angie Martinez's assistant on the Angie Martinez show and actually dropped out of college to work at the station full time for 3 years, but as a free unpaid intern, because that's how you did it in radio. You paid your dues.
That's right.
And so basically what I did when I was at the station, I was doing all the research. I was meeting celebrities every day. I was running the Dilette boards and answering the phones. And then eventually they let me like read commercials and be on air. And so I started to be sort of primed to be the next Angie Martinez. That's what they were priming me for. And so to get more practice on the side, I was doing online radio shows. And after I left Hot 97, I started my own blog site called The Sorority of Hip Hop that became very popular. And I also had online radio shows with that experience. And so by the time I started my podcast in 2018, I basically had five or six other shows, but they were different. They were more like lifestyle shows, talk show style, online radio shows where basically you'd go to a studio and you'd record these podcasts and you would tell everybody, log on to dtfradio.com or bottommusicradio.com or alistradio.com, all these studios that I was a part of, and watch us at 3 p.m. You know, that's how you used to do it. It wasn't like on demand because podcasts weren't popular. So once I saw podcasts getting really popular and I knew that I had all this production experience, I had all this marketing experience, I was like, okay, let me just do this and do this a little differently. Instead of being about music and lifestyle and having a group show with other girls, I'm just going to do it by myself about business. And I started Young and Profiting in 2018.
Wow. You know, I think there's a lot of people who attempted to make the switch from radio broadcast to digital podcasting and a lot of people who failed at doing that. What do you think was the difference that kind of was the reason you were able to make that switch successfully?
I think it was because I was so digitally savvy and I knew how to hack social media platforms. So actually the way that I ended up growing my podcast initially is because I became an influencer on LinkedIn first. And so the day that I launched my podcast, I decided I'm going to put all my chips on LinkedIn to promote my podcast. I had been running corporate accounts on LinkedIn and I kind of knew how the algorithm worked. And I knew there was a wide open gap. No podcasters were thinking about LinkedIn. And so I started just posting about my podcast. And at first, that was really new and different. People were like, why are you posting your podcast on here? This is a business site, blah, blah, blah. But it helped me stand out.
Yeah.
And so I started going viral on LinkedIn, getting a lot of traction. And then I became the number one podcaster on LinkedIn. And I used that to my leverage. I started reaching out to CastBox and Player FM and Riverside FM, where we're recording right now. And literally every podcast app that you can think of. And I said, hey, I'm the number one podcaster on LinkedIn. I have way more followers now. At the time, I had like 80,000 followers.
Yeah.
And I was like, I've got 80,000 followers. I'll do a post for you on LinkedIn in exchange for you featuring me in your app, in exchange for you putting out an email blast about my podcast or featuring me on your website. And so I did that with all the apps. And then suddenly my podcast really exploded. I got on the cover of Podcast Magazine in 2020. And then the rest is history.
Wow. I have always been a LinkedIn poster, and I use LinkedIn mostly for lead gen for Blavity Inc., mostly to like engage with our clients, see who's moving into which companies, promotions, you know, give people happy birthday, congratulations, like really just, again, nurturing. It's a lead funnel for us as a company. Yeah. What was happening, though, was as I was engaging, I would get all these like people who I'm like, you are not my clients and I'm not interested in talking to you. Please go to my Instagram if you want to like learn more about my life, because Instagram was my main platform. So I tried to like redirect people to Instagram. And then I realized probably about 2 years ago, I said, oh, like because Instagram's algorithm is changing and Facebook is basically dying for certain audiences, people are treating LinkedIn like Facebook.
Yeah.
And they're posting all this stuff. So people are using this now to follow like influencers. They are using this to follow thought leaders. They're using this to like socialize in some ways.
Yeah.
But it's like 10 times more brand safe, right? You're not going to get a lot of trolls. Well, you do now. But back in the day, you weren't getting a lot of trolls on LinkedIn. Now there's a lot of mean people doing mean things on LinkedIn. But for the most part, it's still like relationally better than Instagram.
And it's real people, right? So that's LinkedIn is much different from Instagram, where like, for example, I have 242,000 followers now, right? They're all real people.
Yes.
Whereas like if you go on Instagram and somebody has 240K followers, really what that means is they probably have 30K real followers. But on LinkedIn, that's actual real people. And so like, even if you get a post that gets 600 likes and 100,000 impressions, that's 100,000 real people. It's not bots. It's not boosting. There's so much funny business going on Instagram. So LinkedIn, I feel like you get real organic reach. It's a completely hackable platform. There's 135 million daily active users that consume content every day on LinkedIn. Just like you said, Facebook and Instagram, they're consuming it like any other social media site. But the difference is less than 6% of those people are actually original content creators. So there's so many people consuming content and very little people actually posting original content. So there's lots of room to become a thought leader in your niche on LinkedIn.
Yeah. I think one of the things that people don't realize when they see someone successful on a platform, oftentimes they were early adopter of something on that platform, which is what allowed them to get to scale. Right. And what I'm hearing you say is that you were an early adopter of viewing LinkedIn as a distribution platform for your podcast. And that set you apart, which then allowed you to break through the noise, basically, in the podcast audio world. There's this conception, and I think it's a misconception, that podcasts are fully, you know, diluted. Like everybody, they're so oversaturated. There's so many people. Everybody and their mom thinks that they can be a podcaster. What is your response to that? Do you think it's oversaturated?
No, absolutely not. And I think that the way that we need to think about podcasts needs to be different. So I'm going to like go over a couple things. When I first started podcasts, it was all about Apple, okay? And all the big podcasters were on Apple. And most of the people who were topping the charts were like Tim Ferriss, Lewis Howes, Jordan Harbinger. And they were doing it for like 10 years already. And so they had basically like dominated that app. And for 2 years, when I was growing my following on LinkedIn, I kept just focusing on Apple, Apple, Apple. And my downloads were stagnant. And it wasn't until I stepped back and was like, listen, is being a successful podcaster mean that I'm a top podcaster on Apple? Is that the only definition of being a top podcaster? And I was like, well, no, there's 70 other apps out there. How can I break into this industry in a creative way? And that's when I realized there's all these other apps and maybe I can collab with them. So for example, I picked CastBox. CastBox is the number one Android app, especially at that time. Now Google Play has gotten more share and whatever. But at that time, CastBox was the number one Android app. And so I teamed up with CastBox and I just shot my shot. I emailed them and I was like, hey, like, I'm Hala. I'm this podcaster on LinkedIn, blah, blah, blah. Can we collab? So I did my first post for them. They loved it. Then they ended up sponsoring me doing these free trades for a year. Fast forward to today, I'm like the top podcaster on CastBox, over 300,000 subscribers, and like 70% of my downloads are from CastBox.
Wow.
So an Apple update happened in November, and people lost anywhere from 20 to 50% of their downloads because they were only focused on Apple. And guess who didn't lose much?
No, you're popping. That's right.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, guess who didn't really lose much? And I did lose some from Apple, you know what I mean? And I have been growing that, but I was diverse. It's just like having a diverse portfolio, right? So it's like for me, I didn't really get much of an impact where other people lost 50% of their downloads because all they cared about was Apple. So that's just one example of how I broke through the industry in two unique ways. One, I focused on LinkedIn, right? And I focused on like diversifying my podcast players and not only focusing on Apple. So CastBox, Player FM, even like Overcast. I've got like a super diverse following. That's why I always say I'm a top podcaster across all apps, where some people are only a top podcaster on one app.
One platform.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Now, the other thing that's like something to think about is that in the past, podcasts were considered audio only RSS feeds. Mm. Podcasts don't mean the same thing anymore. Mm-hmm. A podcast is whatever you want it to be. It's just a consistent show. And that could be on YouTube, and that could be on live stream, and that could be on audio podcasts, and that could be social clips. Mm-hmm. That could be a live audio session on LinkedIn Audio or Clubhouse if there's some new app like Clubhouse that pops off, right? So podcast is anything, right? That is a show that is consistent. So if you think about it that way, you could become the top LinkedIn live podcaster. You could become the top YouTube podcaster. You could become the whatever, you know what I'm saying? So there's lots of other ways to kind of break out and stand out and own that territory as a podcaster.
Yeah, I think one of the things that you're pointing out, which is important for anyone who's getting started, is yes, you can try to play with the big boys on the big platform, but potentially it's a better route to go in the area that isn't saturated from a distribution perspective and or a new platform entirely, right? So at one point, and TikTok has sunsetted this now, but at one point, like TikTok was playing with podcasts, right? YouTube is playing with podcast features. So how can you be an early adopter of those features and then be the number one there? Mm-hmm. And in the event that it works, like now you've got first mover advantage, right? And basically that's also what you're saying. You had first mover advantage on some of these other platforms that maybe were secondary or third, but as they've grown, you've grown. And they're always going to want to be anchor with someone like you. So you're then their golden egg, right? Mm-hmm. And that's also what I try to remind people, like, this is how I approached fundraising when I was raising VC funding, where I would work with some VCs that were maybe just getting started, but I was going to be their golden egg, their most successful startup. So I was always going to get the callbacks. I was always going to be the ones that they put in their pitch decks. I was always going to be the one that they're like, look, we invested in Morgan and Blavity. And so that helped build my brand behind the scenes, because then they're putting your names in rooms because their success is tied to your success now.
Exactly. Yeah, that reminds me exactly of CastBox. It's like they would put me at events. They would like push me because they're like, hey, look, we really helped this creator. We've been collaborating with her and look at her now, you know? Yeah. So
sometimes it's good to work with the underdog, basically.
Yeah, 100%.
So then what made you decide to eventually build a network? I mean, a network is a shit ton of work. It's a lot of overhead. What made you decide to build this?
Yeah, when I think about my network, it was honestly like destiny. I remember when I first started my podcast, people would come up to me and they'd say like, what is your vision? Like, what's your five-year vision? And I had no idea what I was talking about at the time, but I used to be like, I'm going to have the number one business and self-improvement podcast network. And I literally had no idea what that meant. No idea what it meant. I was just, you know, that was my vision. I saw Russell Simmons, I believe, and he's got this big network. And I was like, he has that for sports. I want to have that for business and self-improvement. And so that's what I always was like envisioning. Now, it doesn't matter how you get there, right? And so the guests that would come on my show, at the end of my show, even when I first started, I always had like big authors, big guests. I always shot for the stars where it came, when it came to my guests, and always had big guests. So they would end the show, and they're all very successful, rich people. And they'd be like, Hala, how'd you grow your LinkedIn? Hala, how'd you grow your podcast? Can you do this for me?
Right.
And something we didn't talk about is for the first 2 years of my podcast, I was working full-time in corporate, and I had a volunteer team of 20 people that worked for free for me for 2 years. And they were basically just interns that I knew all this stuff about marketing. I would teach them. They were thankful that I taught them skills like video editing, audio editing, social media. And they would do it for me while I was at work to help me build this huge podcast, right?
Yeah.
And so I'd tell everybody like, no, I'm so sorry. Like, I've got a job. This is just a hobby. Because it was, in my mind, it was just a hobby to help people. And I can't help you. Mm. But then COVID hit. And Heather Monahan, which is my first client, was so persistent, okay? And she was like on LinkedIn all the time, Hala, I want you to do my videos. Hala, please, let's have a call, blah, blah, blah. So I had a call with her and I showed her my Slack channel and my templates and everything that we do. And she's like, Hala, I had a call with Gary Vee's team yesterday.
Mm.
Your stuff is better than his stuff. You have a company.
Mm.
Can you do my social media for me? Will you do this? And I was like, all right, COVID had hit. It hasn't been that long of a time, like 4 years. COVID had hit and I was like, okay, I don't have a commute anymore. I'm stuck at home. I've got 2 extra hours a day. That's a lot for me. And sure, I'll do your social. And so then I started doing Heather's social. We crushed it for her. She's a huge LinkedIn influencer now.
Yeah.
And then I started taking over her podcast and producing it. And then suddenly I had a social agency. Now, Heather was paying us very little money, but my second client was a billionaire. And he invited me on his show. And at the end of the show, he asked me that question that everybody always asks. Can you do my LinkedIn? Can you do my podcast? And this time I had already like one little client that was paying me literally probably like $700 a month, nothing.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I could do this for you. And I had no logo. I had no website. And I pitched him like before I was the podcast princess, they used to call me the PowerPoint princess. Okay. And I created this amazing PowerPoint because I can graphic design and this and that. I created this amazing PowerPoint and I pitched it to him. Mm. And at first I was pitching three services, LinkedIn, Instagram, podcast. And I had put $3,000 for each service, $9,000. Then my business partner at the time, or he was like an intern basically that turned into my business partner. He's so smart and successful now. And he was like, why don't we just pitch $10,000 each service? He's a billionaire.
Let's go.
Like, yeah, we are really good. I'm like, we're crushing it. Everybody wants our services. Let's do it. And so I did this whole pitch. It was my first pitch for my company. No logo, no website. And at the end of it, I was like, all right. I gave him the price. I'm like, it's $30,000. It's $10,000 a service. And it's all white glove. And he was like, boom, let's do it. And I was like, okay. And so my second client was $30,000 a month. And then everything just went, you know what I'm saying?
Once you get that cash flow.
Then my next client was Kerrygold and Hint Water, another $30,000 a month. And I got Brian Scudamore, 1-800-GOT-JUNK, another like $20,000 deal. And suddenly I was still in corporate 6 months later, 30 employees around the world making over $100,000 a month.
Wow.
And then finally I quit my job. And I started my social media agency. So my social media agency like crushed from literally day one, And we were like really white glove services because I was charging so much. I was like standing up dedicated teams. Yeah, it was like super, super, super white glove and really, really did well.
Right.
So we built out LinkedIn, Instagram, podcast production. We started getting awards for our podcast production. Mm-hmm. And I ended up at this point, because I was doing all these trades with all these podcast players, I also became like the number one expert in growing podcasts for independent podcasters. And those relationships where I was doing those trades, I started to realize they were charging for these services, but they were just giving it to me for free. And so I had all these inroads with these podcast players and I knew which ones worked, which ones didn't really work and whatever. So I started selling that to other podcasters to grow their shows, including my clients.
Mm.
So then I produced really good shows and I started growing their shows and I grew 3 other shows to my size. I started getting myself sponsorships, selling out my show. Then I got those people sponsorships. And then one Christmas break, I got COVID. Again, COVID is like, I end up finding all this time with COVID.
Oh my gosh.
I got COVID and I was really sick and I couldn't spend Christmas or New Year's with anyone and I was bored and I had this epiphany. I was like, well, I can start my podcast network. And so again,
I have COVID. Let me build another business.
Yeah, I have COVID. I've got 2 weeks. Let's do this. And I literally put together, again, a PowerPoint with my idea for my network, which was like my initial pitch. And I just started it from there and I started recruiting podcasters and here we are, Yap Media Network. So it's just, honestly, it's everything that I do it for myself first and I do it really well. And then I productize it and I figure out how to offer it to other people. They always say your best customer is who you formerly were. And so I literally just take what I've done really well for myself and I figure out how to offer it to other people and scale it out. So that's what I did with my network.
So good. So interesting. There's so many gems in there. You know, I think one, the fact that you were ambitious and courageous enough to say, you know what, instead of 3K a month or 9K a month, let's do 10K a service. And the thing about billionaires and people who are incredibly wealthy, they don't think of money the same way like we normal people think about money, you know, like the margin of difference for him is irrelevant, right? And the impact and value you're creating for someone who's a billionaire to, for him to get the visibility is probably like worth 10x the 30K.
So, and I made him all his money back once I started. The thing is, I did a good job, right? Yes. Once I grew a show, he was making 60K a month. He made all that money back.
Easy, easy. And then once the show is built, it's built. Like these are real people, to your point. It's an audience that you own. One of the things I love about podcasting is that it's allowed me to have a better relationship with other people. It's allowed me to explain in a more intimate setting, like who I am, how I think, and have conversations that are more meaningful and, in my opinion, more impactful. So that anyone who's like, I want to be successful, I'm ambitious, I also want to have balance, I want to do all these things, Morgan, how do I do it? I'm like, bro, if you're asking me these questions and you don't listen to my podcast, then like you're not really valuing my time. You know,
exactly.
Instagram and TikTok and all these places, they're very transactional, very fleeting. And so I think the value of one listener, one person being in their ear is 10x a follower on any other platform.
100%. Podcasters are so engaged. They feel like they're actually friends with the podcast host. That's why podcast advertising actually works so well, because when a host gives a recommendation, people who are listening, they trust that recommendation much more than they would just like a social media influencer, because you're in their ear all the time and they feel like they know you because of that.
And now a word from our sponsor for today's episode. In the world of social media, connection is everything. Entrepreneurs, content creators, designers, and all types of brands and small businesses need to engage with their audience and share their online identity. A .bio domain is a great way to do that. I love buying domain names because it helps me share with the world new information and have a clear place to manage my links and content. Short, memorable, and professional, your .bio domain name is the best way to share yourself with the world. Right now at porkbun.com/thejourney, you can get a .bio domain name for your LinkedIn bio page for a low price, plus tons of freebies like SSL certificates, web and email hosting trials, and more. Now let's take a quick break from our sponsor. When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the right tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. LinkedIn has a vast network of more than a billion professionals, which makes it the best place to hire. It gives you access to professionals you literally can't find anywhere else, and it does all of that while making the process easy and intuitive. I use LinkedIn every single time when I'm hiring candidates for Blavity and for Devon & Co., and I consistently find the top people who are right for our company's roles. Hiring is so much easier when you have that many quality candidates to source from. It's so easy, in fact, that 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. So head over to LinkedIn to post your job for free on linkedin.com/divine. That's linkedin.com/divine to post your job for free. Terms and conditions, of course, apply. Thanks, LinkedIn. Let's actually talk a little bit about monetization.
Sure.
One of the things that's been happening recently across the entire creator industry is that audiences are now super smart. They know when someone's a full-time influencer, and they also now can tell the difference between someone who's a creator and just an influencer. And what we're seeing is that a lot of influencers who really just were taking pretty pictures, making pretty videos, their engagement's going down, their revenue is going down because the audience is like, oh, you're going to do any deal. Like, you're going to go from this lipstick brand to this lipstick brand to this lipstick brand and tell me every single one is the one you use every single day. Right? Mm-hmm. And I think what's interesting about podcasting and what I've been experiencing is people have been like, hey, Morgan, can you like talk about this, you know, credit card? And I'm like, well, I have to actually use the credit card to talk about that credit card, you know? And then sometimes I'll lose deals because I'm like, oh, like I don't use that product, or like that's not actually something that I would use. And I'm like, oh, did you guys really think I was going to say yes to this if I don't use it? And the answer is yes, there are people out here doing that. But I'm curious, what is your perspective for creators and influencers, podcasters, really anyone trying to monetize their audience on their integrity when they're doing brand deals? How do they evaluate what is a good deal to take and what's not a good deal to take?
Yeah, I think really what you have to do is think about your listeners. You need to understand who is listening to your podcast, right? So as you know, I run this network, right? I have a lot of creators that, let's say, have a business show. And so in their mind, they're like, I can only have business brands on my podcast because that's what people listening care about. But what I say to them is that the truth, right? Doesn't everybody need to eat, right? So wouldn't you want to talk about meal kits? Doesn't everybody need to go to the doctor? So why wouldn't you talk about ZocDoc, right? Doesn't everybody need to work out? So why wouldn't you talk about this new workout app? So one thing to note is that when you have a podcast, even if you're in a certain niche, you do not have to stick to that niche. You need to think about what do people listening, even if they are business people, they're also humans with dynamic interests. And then you need to figure out the intersection of what are you interested in and what can you talk about? Because the best reads are, like you said, you have personal endorsements. So do you actually use the product? Does it align to your values, right? And then, like, are you passionate about it? Because my best sponsors, like, for example, Shopify, I use this app every day.
Right.
And I'm their top podcaster because I talk about Shopify with enthusiasm because I actually love the platform and I use it. And so I end up coming up with like really funny ad reads and they're really entertaining because it's the truth. It's my truth. And it's very obvious. Like sometimes if I have like a boring sponsor that I'm not interested in, it's like my read is boring because I'm like, oh, I don't know what to say about this boring ass sponsor.
Yeah,
like,
that's right. We just started ads. So if you guys are listening to this and there was an ad that played before it, Hollis team ran that deal, closed it, and ran the operations behind the scenes. Tell me what goes into pitching shows. Like, what are the things that are happening behind the scenes? What are the things that like are getting different podcasters in your network better deals, even if they have a smaller audience than others? Like, give me the scenes.
So there's two main ways to get sponsors in the industry. There's agencies and there's direct deals. Okay. So there's like 20, 30 different podcast specific agencies. And then a layer above that is agencies that sell everything like TV, and they also have podcasts, right? So there's like two layers of agency. Ones are podcast specific. So these are like your Oxford Rhodes, your Raritone Ones. They're specific podcaster specific agencies. And then there's a layer above them that kind of feeds into those agencies as well. Okay. Then there's direct sponsorships where certain sponsors that especially do heavy podcast buying have their own teams to buy podcasts. So there's really two approaches that we're taking on a daily basis. Number one is getting integration with these agencies. And so there's all these different account reps. They manage like, you know, 3-4 brands each.
Right.
These brands are buying at different cycles. And so our job is to like wine and dine these folks, have quarterly meetings with them, check in on email, see who's buying, constantly vet our podcasts for their brands and proactively send it to them and things like that. So basically, we're trying to integrate with these agencies to try to get deals. And we're always trying to find new agencies that we aren't fully integrated with, or like figuring out how we can deepen our relationships and be closer as networks and agency. Okay. Then we have direct which is basically like finding target brands. So for example, one of the things we do is to get brand wish lists from our podcasters, like what are the brands that you want to work with? Mm-hmm. We also like segment our podcasters by demo, and then we try to find brands that match that and pitch like a subset of our podcasters to those brands. And we basically do like automated emails where we're constantly trying to find podcast brands and we're looking at different tools. So there's tools like Magellan and there's tools like PodSpect. And we're basically seeing like, what are the new brands buying in the space? What are the biggest spenders in the space? Who's advertising on competitor podcasts that have the same audience demo? And we're basically pulling lists and then we're getting the contact information either from these tools or scraping them off LinkedIn and finding titles. And then we're doing automated email blasts and stuff like this to get interest. So those are the two main ways. It's agency integration and it's direct outreach and doing research on brands with direct outreach. And then there's, you know, the marketing and sales materials. So it's like usually everybody has like a catalog. That's what they call it in the industry, where it's like all your podcasters, all their demo information, all the things that you need for deals. And then, of course, their rates and download numbers and things like that.
You know, I have a huge network. It's a display ad network. So for publishers, multicultural publishers, so we'll do, you know, all impression-based things online. So it's so funny because it's same but different, right? Like we work with agencies and similar to you, like we sell our own inventory for Blavity. We have, you know, 5-6 websites and then all of our social accounts. And then we'll work with the agencies and say like, okay, here's our portfolio of brands. And then here's our extension, audience extension, which is all of our other networks publishers. And what's interesting is that one of the things that's been coming up a lot lately is brand safety. Is that something that comes up in the podcasting world? Because I think for me, when I listen to podcasts, I'm like, oh, you guys are like raunchy up in here over here. So like, what are the criteria or different types of things that are taken into place when you are pitching different podcast shows?
Yeah. So the brand safety thing is a brand new concept in the podcast world. And now there's a brand called Seeker that's becoming really popular. It's a platform and they have something called the civility score. Okay. It's brand new. So basically now when we're submitting podcasters, we've got to submit their civility score. And because I have a business and self-improvement podcast, all my podcasts are like 98%, 100% civility scores. They're super brand safe. That's why we're doing so well. And in fact, 38% of marketers say that business brands perform the best for their ads. Yes.
Wow. That's incredible. And so if someone was starting today, and let's say they do really well on YouTube, like let's say they have their mega platform already where they've got 100K, 200K active engaged community, but they're worried about the algorithms changing and they want to own their audience a little bit better. And so they've been considering a podcast. They know it's expensive. You know, they know that they need to invest in production. They know they need to make it video, not just audio. So they're like, they get the basics. What are the other things that they should be considering that would position them to monetize early?
To monetize early. That's the specific question.
Yes.
Okay. So one thing I want to note is that, again, back to this concept of podcasts are no longer audio only. Podcast is becoming this more like abstract concept of a show. And because of that, people are starting to monetize podcaster influencer channels across all their channels. The other thing that we didn't talk about is that one of the reasons why my company is doing so well as a network is because we're pioneering cross-channel campaigns.
Yes.
Because we started as a social agency and we're the only network that started as a social agency. So I have a whole 40-person team on the social side that can help execute campaigns and things like this.
Yes.
So we're selling podcasts audiences across all their channels. And that's how brands are thinking about it now. So for example, with my simulcast is my audio podcast, my YouTube, and it's also my live stream views. And we're monetizing live stream views as well, the same way that we'd monetize a simulcast. And we're selling it in the same way, right? And that's acceptable because, again, podcasts are becoming more abstract. So that's one thing I just wanted to call out, because if you're already a social media influencer, let's say you've got a strong Instagram, you could do Instagram Lives as your simulcast. And then suddenly you're able to monetize from day one, even if you have a small audio, because if you combine those numbers, now suddenly you have an audience, even if your audio is so small.
You just blew my mind. Well, when we first talked, you know, you were talking about simulcast and I was like, well, what do you really mean? What are we really saying here?
I'm already starting to pitch your LinkedIn Live.
Let's go. You know, so if anyone's watching this, they're like, oh my God, Morgan, that's why you like have been doing these LinkedIn Lives. Yes, this is why I'm doing LinkedIn Lives, because I had this dormant audience that I was just using to push to other places, sign up for my newsletter, listen to the podcast, sign up to pay Blavity some money to do a brand deal, like whatever. Mm-hmm. And now it's become this whole other channel that's a podcast audience. It's a listener audience that can be monetized mm-hmm. and increase my total impressions. What's been crazy to me, though, is that it's no extra work for me, mm-mm. you know, and I was thinking that it was going to be a lot of work to figure out how to do it. And it took us like literally no time at all.
And I remember, because I just was working on a deal for you yeah. for LinkedIn, and I'm selling your LinkedIn yeah. Live commercials. Okay. And you're getting like 11,000 views on each one. So I was able to increase your monthly impressions almost by 50K.
Wow.
Which is a lot of extra revenue yeah. for doing no additional work. Now, the other benefit of being cross-channel and having this cross-channel mindset is if you play your podcast on LinkedIn, for example, all the people that are watching it, when they watch a live stream, they're typically only going to watch, let's say if it's 40 minutes, they might watch 20 minutes.
That's right.
So the engagers on there, you want to retarget them in the DMs mm. or in the comments. And you say, mm. hey, thank you so much for watching my live stream. I'd love for you to subscribe to mm. my podcast channel. And let me know what you thought about the episode. Did you like it? And then they'll respond like, hey, I loved it so much, blah, blah, blah. On an audio podcast, you can't ask your listeners how they liked your show.
That's
you don't
right.
have that two-way communication. So then they write back, oh my God, I love this takeaway, blah, blah, blah. Thank you. Can you copy and paste that as an Apple podcast review? Here's my rate this podcast link.
Come on, somebody. Let's go. This is the stuff people need to know, because here's my thing. Here's what drives me nuts. People think that successful people, it just happens. Mm-mm. And that, you know, you're going to read a blog post on how to start a podcast and that's going to give you the real tea. No, that's why all of you guys are failing. It's because mm-hmm. you think it's really simple. You just have a show and you tell your friends to listen. Mm-mm. That's not what's happening here.
No, guys, this is why if you go look at the charts right now, I swear, if we go look at the charts right now, I'm either number one or number two in entrepreneurship. I'm probably yep. seven or eight in business on yep. all of Apple. There's 500,000 podcasts out yep. there. Why? Because I'm going on LinkedIn and I'm getting new subs every day and I'm getting new reviews every other day or whatever. Where yep. if you go look at other podcasts, they're getting one review a month.
No, they're flat.
You know what I'm saying? But mm-hmm. that's also why I'm getting brand deals, because they're going on my podcast and they see like 30 new reviews. They're seeing all this yeah. top ranking. It's because I'm making everything an ecosystem. Right. And I'm bringing people from email to my podcast and from my podcast to my socials and just trying to make it more of an ecosystem.
Yeah. And here's the thing as well, like people want to engage with real people. So when they listen to your show and when the people are listening to my show, you know, and I'm talking about vulnerable things, my weight, my baby, you know, growing the business, failing, losing money, making money. I'm talking about real stuff. Mm-hmm. They feel connected. So that's also the exact right moment to be like, hey, could you do something for me?
Yeah.
You know, could you like this on Spotify or like this on Apple? Can you make sure you're sending a rating? And I'm curious, are you using an automation tool? Are you using ManyChat? Or are you guys doing it because you have this huge team behind the scenes?
It's both. So on Instagram, we use ManyChat. Mm-hmm. And then on LinkedIn, I use virtual assistants.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I need to step up my LinkedIn game. I have two great virtual assistants that I work with. Shout out to them. And I've had a virtual assistant before I had like any employees. I was like queen of people in the Philippines. Like,
me too. Another.
Oh my, what's
oh
that?
Oh my like, God. I had like two jobs. I'd be like day job and then 9 p.m. my Filipino team, right?
That's
like,
right.
That's how you have to
difference.
Do it. Yep.
And I mean, to me, I'm like, sometimes I'm like, you guys, I'm going to just pay way over your rate just because mm-hmm. you're so good. And mm-hmm. it would cost me 10X here in the States. But I think that's a really interesting thing also for people to consider is like, you don't always have to hire domestically. I'm taking a slight pivot because I think it's interesting. And I've talked about this before.
Yeah.
How have you found teams overseas?
Ooh, good question. So just for like context for everybody, I have a 60-person team. I have 20 U.S. employees and 40 other people are in the Philippines and India. So I have a very international team. And it's certain roles that I think are appropriate for international team members. They're usually non-client facing roles. So mm-hmm. anything that is client facing, I usually have a U.S. role and anything that is behind the scenes, I usually try to hire internationally for many reasons. Number one, they're more loyal. Number two, they take their job a lot more seriously, especially when it comes to like repetitive tasks and things like that. They're just like more happy and thankful. And number three, some of my best, smartest employees have come from overseas. And honestly, I love overseas talent. Okay. So how did I find them? LinkedIn is my number one way. So one of the things that I did, I'll tell you a funny story of how I started my creative team. Okay. When I first started my podcast, this is before I had my social agency, I found a service called Video Husky. Okay. It is in the Philippines. And they were like, it's unlimited videos for $700 a month.
Unlimited videos.
So I was like, oh, okay. You know me. I'm like, unlimited. We're going for it.
Let's go.
So I'm in the tool. I'm trying to get my unlimited videos. And they were like only giving me like 2-3 videos a week. And they fired me as a client. They were like, you were way too demanding. They're like, you need your own team.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay. And the girl who was helping me was great. Right.
Yeah. You're like, can I hire you?
So I went on Video Husky on LinkedIn and you can see who works there. And you can see their titles. And so I message everybody, hey, what's up? I'm looking for a video team. How much does Video Husky pay you a month? Let me know. And the girl that was doing my video was like, hey, I actually hate working at Video Husky. They pay me $500 a month. And I was like, cool, I'll pay you $700.
Done.
And then I really had unlimited videos for the month. So that's basically what I did. I would go and find companies in the Philippines who already had video editors that they were training or whatever. And I'd poach them on LinkedIn. I'd hit them up in the DMs. How much you're getting paid? Okay, I'll pay you $200 more a month. Let's go. And then once I started growing my team, you know, Slack channel is very important, I think, so you can have communication. Because when it comes to remote teams, it's all about like consistent communication. And I really think Slack was the thing because I had Slack from day one when I started my volunteer team. And that basically turned into my company.
Yeah.
That was what set me apart is because I was constantly chatting and keeping tabs with my team. And so that was really important. But basically, once you have a foundation of team members, then they just start telling their friends, you know? And so they would like even help me with hiring, putting it on like Filipino job boards and things like that. So that's basically how I started my creative team. And even like some of my top talent on my network side, on the ad ops team, I found them from LinkedIn.
That's awesome.
And a lot of the times these were people were like, for example, I have one girl, her name is Kriti. She's the VP of ad ops at my team. She gets paid so much. She's in India and she's like, we always joke that she's like riding around on a gold elephant because I pay her so much.
She's like, I'm lit over here.
Yeah, so she's like crushing.
Yeah.
She started as a copywriter and she was terrible. But she was so like scrappy and had the best like attitude. And I was like, well, maybe you can help me with other stuff. And she just started helping me. And eventually she found her spot in ad ops and like just skyrocketed there. So it's also about letting people feel out where they work best. If you've got somebody who's got a good culture fit, they're really smart and they're international, because they're not paid that much, it's okay to kind of treat them as an intern and assistant for a while until they find their feet. So like we've done a lot of that sort of like shifting people who have potential.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I'll tell you a funny story with one that we were just working on. So, you know, every podcast, we come up with our video clips. My partner in life, Josh, has a huge video production company here based in Nashville. You know, got all the crazy equipment, the vans, all the things. And he works with venture-backed companies on their video marketing. And so I used to have his team do the video clips. So I was like, man, you guys are expensive and you take too long. And it's not that it'd take too long, but I'm like, you know, in our world, I need 2-3 clips like tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, every day I need them tomorrow. And so we were then like, all right, well, let's just go hire a video editor. Like they can work full time for my business. His team will manage it. Cool. And so we started getting quotes back from people and these quotes came back crazy, like $4,000 a month, you know, to be a dedicated video editor. As a contractor, you know, 25 hours a week or something like that. Or like, you know, $350 a minute that we'll get it, you know, like, I was like, this is dumb. Like, I refuse. So we went on Upwork. My chief of staff, Kate, who's incredible, went on Upwork and she posted, you know, looking for a video editor, et cetera, got back like 10 people. So we gave each one of those people a folder with the exact same B-roll. And we said, all right, like, go make a video and get it back to us. And then in my DMs, in my LinkedIn DMs and my Instagram DMs, I had these random people in India who were like DMing me and being like, ma'am, I can do video. I've made this video for you. And they like pitched me by making a video for me. And usually I would like not ignore them, but just be like, oh, these are So I respond to two of these people in my DMs as well and give them the same folder. Because at this point, I'm like, I got money to spend. Who wants it?
Yeah.
You know, this guy came back and $75 a video. And it was so good. And the person who came back, $350 a video, you know, asked a million and one questions, had to go through 3-4 edits, like all this stuff, you know. And then some people came back at $150 level. I mean, it was a wide range. But the best person for the right price, that with the right speed, with a minimal amount of back and forth of questions, $75 a video.
I think what you're saying is so important, especially with international hires. You've got to give them like assessments.
Yes.
And tests. You got to give them test assignments. That's how you just figure out like who's the phonies. And because a lot of people overseas, like they're asking for rates that are like double what their rates should really be. And like they're making up their skills and whatever. So you've got to assess them and have like tests prepared. To your point, that is the best way to just get the fastest, best talent.
Yeah. And also not judge someone based off of their vocabulary or how they're typing and stuff. And that's the other thing.
Especially with ChatGPT now.
Yeah. So I'm like, I don't know, ma'am, sir, I don't know what you're talking about. But here's the video file and get it back to me, you know?
Love it.
And we just posted a video recently. It's me doing a bunch of hobbies, gardening, painting and stuff. Did so well.
Amazing.
And what I'm trying to get people to understand, my philosophy is work smarter, not harder, right? And also all that glitters isn't gold. All that you see when you see all these things coming out, don't assume you know how people are getting this stuff done behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to think unconventionally. If you're going to be scrappy, if you're a billionaire, pay the price.
Exactly. So true. It's like if you're really, really rich, you could just work with me, I'll produce your show, or not me specifically, work with anyone who can grow your show, produce your show, and it's going to cost money. If you don't have a lot of money, you got to get creative.
So creative. And the creativity isn't just negotiate other people down, right? You got to think more broadly. So just in conclusion, I just want to make sure we're really tactical with people who are listening to this episode.
Yeah.
So they've got an idea. They understand that they can build their audience across multiple platforms. They can do simulcast, which will give them more reach. They understand that they need to be specific on their category if they want to monetize and the type of content that they create so they can be brand safe, so they can get good brand deals. Is there anything else that you think sets people apart as they're thinking about building this business?
Yeah, a couple things. One thing to note is that when it comes to podcasts and audio downloads specifically, again, so we spent a lot of time talking about the fact how it's not audio only, but when it comes to growing your audio show, a couple tips for starters is that SEO really matters. So how are people finding your show? They're finding you in the podcast player. So when you're thinking about growing your audio channels, you want to be where the audio listeners are, which is in the podcast apps. The average listener is listening to like 8 shows at a time. You want to be one of those shows. And so you want to be advertising to them in those apps. So what does that mean? Either doing podcast player buys or like what me and you are doing right now, guesting on other shows. This is basically a long commercial, if you think about it, for me. And I bet you a lot of you are going to go check out my podcast. And same thing when Morgan was on my show, right? Yes. So it's doing things like that so you can get more exposure to podcast listeners in the actual podcast apps. The other thing you can do is commercial swaps, right? So you can have commercials on other podcasters. So me and Morgan can come up with a deal where I can say, hey, let's swap 100,000 impressions of commercials a month to grow our shows.
Right.
And that's the kind of things that networks do behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's one of the tips of growing your shows is being in the podcast players. But back to SEO, the other main way to grow your show is that people are actually using like Apple Podcasts and other apps to discover new podcasts. So that means you need to have strong SEO, which means the title of your podcast should really be something that people are searching. And I do notice that there are many podcasters out there who have no personal brand, who have no influence on social media, but their podcast blew up because they have the best SEO name. Like it will be like Self-Improvement Daily.
Right.
Or Self-Help Podcast or Millennial Investing. These are all examples of podcasters that have literally no social following and huge podcasts.
Retire because, early.
Because they have the keywords in their title. Now, I did it backwards.
Yeah.
I'm only successful because I'm a good marketer.
Yeah.
Because Young and Profiting, no one's searching that. I had to create that. I had to invent that.
Right.
Right. But had I called it Young Entrepreneur, I swear it would have been 100 times easier. I might even change my show name as like, you know, I'm not that young anymore, so I need to eventually change it. And so I'm going to change it to something strategic that people are searching for. So that's why if you're not an influencer already, don't call it like your name show. Nobody knows who you are yet. So you need to actually think about the keywords, and your titles of your episodes are also searchable. They're searchable on Google. They're searchable on YouTube. YouTube is like almost as popular as Google search. So think about the way that you title. You want to have keywords in your titles, and you want to think about the keywords in your actual show name. Very important things in the beginning. You make that mistake in the beginning, it's really hard to change later on. So those are some of the things. The other thing I'd say is stand out and understand that the way that you format your show is going to impact your revenue.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, a lot of people have this cute idea of having 5-minute daily shows, right? You can't put a commercial on a 5-minute show.
Right.
So the longer your episode, the more commercials you can put on it, right? So you got to think about that. If you're really interested in monetizing, you shouldn't have such a short show, or else you're not going to really be able to put ads on your show because there's not going to be enough content.
That's right.
So just some things to think about.
Yeah. So I know y'all love my quick little episodes, but RIP to those.
Yeah.
Except for there'll be bonuses, basically.
I don't know if people really like short episodes. Like,
no, they do, at least for my audience.
Oh, they do?
My solo episodes that are like 20, 25 minutes out, like, rank.
Well, we could still do some of those, but you just need longer episodes also.
Yes, exactly. So, I mean, I need to do at least 4 shows a month. So mm-hmm. if I'm doing 4 shows a month, I might do 4 shows plus a little 20-minute, exactly. a little exactly. popper. Yeah. You know, a little teaser.
It's also important to do what the listeners love, right?
Yeah.
It's a balance.
Yeah, exactly. But it is important to also know the decisions that you're making, the opportunity cost of those decisions.
Totally.
Being on a show, talking to somebody for an extra 15 minutes, you know, is significant in the podcasting world.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
100%.
Yeah. So 30 minutes versus 45 minutes, big difference, actually. Mm-hmm. Big difference.
Yeah.
Okay. This is super helpful. How else can people get connected to you? Not just you, but also your agency. If people want to pitch to get on your network, like what is the process to get in front of you?
Yeah. So I would say if you go to yapmedia.io, all of the information about recruitment, if you want to submit for recruitment is on there. If you're a brand and you want to advertise on our shows, you can go there. Also, all my agency services are listed there and you can like submit a form. So yapmedia.io. If you're interested in LinkedIn and learning from me and taking my LinkedIn masterclass, it's yapmedia.io/course.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then if you want to follow me, Young and Profiting Podcast, Yap with Hala on Instagram. And then on LinkedIn, you can just search my name. It's Hala Taha.
Amazing. All right, y'all. Thank you so much for listening. Hala, thank you so much. Thank you for making me a rich woman. I appreciate you.
I appreciate you. This was so much fun.
So fun. Thanks for listening to the Journey Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you leave a review and head to our Instagram and YouTube to leave a comment. I look forward to hearing how this podcast has made an impact on your own journey.